get a chance to visit my studio at the Hunters Point Shipyard. Troy's been out there. We have six buildings that are full of artists. And most of the time you can't maybe get out of my one building because there's so many people in that building. Just imagine a naval barrack, like naval barracks, and they have this building, and every single room in it is now for two stories, long hallways, like all the way across that street, that are full of artist studios that you go in and out of, and you go into their personal space and see and ask how they created things and look at their work. But Troy will tell you, not everyone is intermingling and interacting with you. Some artists are recluse, some artists are very quiet. Some artists want just the work to speak to you.
Welcome to another episode of The Maker's Make. Today we're here to talk about Rennell Roberts, but more specifically we're here to talk about art, about making, about discovering. And who better to speak to this concept of discovery than a man I'd like to call Two-Face. The villain. Yeah, the Batman villain. Because that's exactly who Rennell reminds me of. Not in his actions, but in his appearance, in what he symbolizes. It's this cartoon, of course, of a man split right down the middle. On the left side is a white tailored suit with a red tie. Hair slicked back, class oozing out of every pore. And on the right side, scar tissue, yellowed eyes. A mischievous smile, flicking a coin up in a red suit with a checkered tie. Madness, creativity, danger. Rennell's 9 to 5 is with none other than Apple. But that's the classy side. The man wearing the white Converse with rolled up jeans. It was no surprise that I followed those light steps right to the north side of Hayes Valley. Across the Jazz Center he beamed, but what did surprise me was the other face, obscured just away from view.
So the level there of confidence and connecting is different. And what I like to bring is an experience. I've been doing this at Apple, I've been doing this at Neiman Marcus. I want you to smell the smell that when you come in. I want you to hear the jazz music. I want you to see the food on the table, the grapes, the cheese, the wine that's there. I want you to see the color on the wall. I want you to come into a space where you go, okay, oh, this is it. This speaks. I can't forget this. And I have people who come to my studio who never buy anything. They just wanted to come and to be in the room. They wanted to feel, and I'm very humbled by that. There are thousands and hundreds of other studios they can go to. Now, we want to get paid. We want you to buy us some up in here, not eat all my grapes and drink my wine. But we also want there to be an experience that happens to you that doesn't happen anywhere else, except you're being at Shea Rennell Gallery that day. Yeah. And so that's what I'm trying to create. And I've known this over time. I've spent so many years, I've been at my art studio for 13 years, and there's been those years where I paid the $180 for the, you know, registration, and I didn't even make $180. I made my own cheese and crackers. You know, it happens. It's the risk you take by going out and sharing your gift and doing what you love to do. And you've got to know in your mind that whether you get paid or not, you're going to do it.
You do it because you have to.
You must. Makers must make.
You must.
And they will.
All right, let's take a step back. I think we need to take that step back to make our progress forward. I met up with Rennell through my man Troy. Troy gave me the introduction, got to talk with Rennell. Did a little chit-chat, and it became quite evident within 30 seconds that this is the guy I want to be talking to. So I asked him for an interview, and luckily he obliged. Just like that, the journey began, and a French restaurant. Well, if you want to consider La Boulange a French restaurant, yeah, we met at a French restaurant. Walking in was similar to any restaurant, but looking over to Ronell, it seemed like it was important. Throughout the walls were pieces of art. Art by none other than Ronell.
So yeah, I created this artwork using masking tape and acrylic paint on watercolor paper. I never just started out of my love for the vintage poster. And so I've done the iconic images of San Francisco, you know, Twin Peaks, Palace of Fine Art, the Painted Ladies, Golden Gate Bridge. And then I started doing posters of different neighborhoods here in San Francisco. Because I know this whole city is made up of neighborhoods. People love their neighborhoods. So I have the Mission, and the Castro, and Noe Valley, the Haight, North Beach, Bayview Opera House. So I created all these posters so I could put the work there and people could kind of celebrate their neighborhood.
I love that.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, I love that.
Got a couple other things over here. So this one here is just, I love Paris.
Yeah.
You know, Paris and coffee. You know. Yeah.
That's the name of your studio, the Art of Color?
Yeah,
the Art of Color.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And then the one down there is like a takeoff from his original painting is Chat Noir. It's Black Cat.
Yeah.
And so I just took a whole series of Toulouse-Lautrec designs and made them kind of my own for the coffee shops.
So mainly, who would you say your major clientele are?
That is interesting. So. Definitely the millennials, yep. Because they like the simplicity of design.
That's true. That's true. I can see that.
But it goes into the collectors, people who collect art, and they're up above 40 years old, and some who are retired.
It seems like two different worlds.
It is a different world.
Yeah.
But the millennials buy my artwork because they want to just put it. It's colorful. And they like it to put in their apartments or their condos or whatever.
Yeah.
But then there is that group who is older, who is collecting artwork and wants to include it. And they're usually going after the originals. Because they're looking at the investment over time of what could might happen to me in terms of the work.
Right.
But I'm not going nowhere.
Now, there isn't some rigid definition of what it means to be a maker yet. Ronell is a caricature of what an artist is, so to speak, especially when he's in his neighborhood. Just watch how many people he connects with. By connects, I mean says hey or gives a pound to. It's just really cool watching an artist in his hood.
Hey, what's up, baby? How you doing? That's my sneakers guy. You know, it's always good to have a sneaker guy.
I'm a sneaker guy. No problem.
No biggie. You know, you go in there.
I got a mocha guy. I got a sneaker guy.
That's Cameron. You know, and I go in there. I'm like, Cameron, I only got $50. Okay. Right. We're gonna give you the friends and family, you know,
discount.
We're gonna make them $49 just for you. I'm like, okay. I'm like, see, that's why I keep coming back.
That's the experience you're talking about. That's that experience you're talking about.
That's that experience we're talking about. Yeah, make that experience worth it, right? Exactly. That's that experience. You ask me how come people keep coming back.
Yeah, just give them and keep making $49. Yeah.
That will help.
Yeah, that would definitely
help. You know, for sure. The neighborhood has just really changed over time. Haight Valley used to be pretty seedy because there was an overpass here, and people, you know, there would be like people just hanging out underneath the underpass here in this neighborhood. It was just like an armpit kind of neighborhood, not much happening. And so once it took away the overpass, it just opened it up a lot more. And then shops started coming in. And they really started coming in 2008 when I first moved here. This community started changing a lot. We started getting the boutique shops, a lot of restaurants. This used to be a Safeway store, this area. And they took that down, and now they're building these high-rises.
I find it so interesting that you have such a rosy perspective. Whereas anytime I get in an Uber with a lot of people, I mean, we talk about sort of the changing face of San Francisco.
Uh-huh.
It's usually always a, God darn, these things are coming in, and they're breaking up my home, making it too expensive.
Okay, now I can tell you that part, too. Yeah. There's a side of that I have resistance to. My only part about that is that, sure, they're going to price out. Anytime you're going to have people coming in with a median salary of $150,000 to $250,000, it's going to price everything out. But my thing is, I feel like I get the opportunity to show art that helps them remember that San Francisco is made up of communities.
I think that's a beautiful thing, but then you understand that San Francisco, my idea of San Francisco was an idea, this culture of beatniks, of people, artists, people who want to do cool stuff. Those people got pushed to Oakland, and now those people are getting pushed out further. Now you're left in this situation where a lot of the people
I'm very fortunate.
Yeah, you are. It's a really fortunate situation where you can remain an artist.
Yeah.
But I find it interesting that the way you had to be, the way that you can still make art is by ingratiating yourself within the tech community. It's like you play both worlds.
The word I was looking for here was duplicity. The desire to express, yet to belong, to illuminate, yet to hold the deck of cards just a little bit closer to the heart. You see, there is a reason why Two-Face is one of the most interesting villains. He's not one or the other, or both at the same time. He's aggressively each one at different times, and that's what makes him so interesting.
He had a guy for that too.
He has a guy.
A guy, a vocal guy, and he got that guy too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I'm the artist, and I just want to show them my work.
Go ahead.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. As a matter of fact, I talked to the owner, Brian Casanego. Has a place called the Wine Bar out in the Fillmore. I have here and have had for the time since I've.
Just to recap you, we're now in a way from La Blanche in a totally different restaurant bar. It's more like a trendy bar where there's a sit-down spot to eat. And that's where we are. All right, let's go back.
First, we're placed here because Brian reached out to me and said, Brunel, we'd love to have your artwork here for a art walk.
Yeah, and your show was right here.
It was right here.
We have a picture of us standing right in front of these.
And your kids were short. They weren't as tall as they are now. It's amazing, man. What a couple of pieces as well.
All right.
Yeah. So yeah. Very happy. That's like an anchor piece. I always tell them to keep their eyes on it. That piece was used for the Fillmore Jazz Festival poster in 2011. This one right here. It's of Hugh Masekela from South Africa.
Well, I'm going to leave you here with a life pro tip. Anytime you speak to a subject matter expert, an artist, it is 100% certain that they will say things that you have zero idea of what they are talking about. Hugh Masekela, who the hell is Hugh Masekela? Don't worry, we know he's from South Africa, but that is not how we're going to attack this. It's two steps, people. Acknowledge and turn. Acknowledge.
It's of Hugh Masekela from South Africa.
Acknowledge. And turn to something that you know that is somewhat related.
Interesting. No, I follow jazz, but a lot more American jazz. And the classics. One of my favorite jazz musicians is Thelonious Monk.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I love it.
I Monk. Do a Monk.
Close enough. And just like that, you sound slightly less dumb, at least for the moment. Enjoy. And good luck.
I feel like you're dead on. I think this is like, you have people who go through the drive-thru, which is what that would be over at La Boulange. People who just want to get something and go through the drive-thru.
Right.
But people want to sit down and enjoy a meal and really savor the experience. I think that's what this is going to be. They're looking at they're savoring the experience and the technique of this work. It is more complex. It takes time. You can't just shoot through here and connect to it. You have to like stand in front of this for a while and go, and get close and go, wow, the strokes, this is different. He did this. He packed it on. He let the paint drip. Okay, I get it. But yeah, it's one of my favorite pieces. I did this because it really reminded me of my summer, my 13th birthday party, when we played Hugh Masekela, Grazing in the Grass song.
Yeah.
And I was still dancing and enjoying my summer. My summer birthday in May. So when the people who reached out to me from the Fillmore Jazz Festival, they reached out to me and said, do you have some pieces? As a matter of fact, I was recommended by a well-known graphic designer by the name of Michael Schwab here in San Francisco. He said, I saw the work of Ronell Roberts. I think you need to reach out to him and see what work he might have. We want to give him that opportunity. And so they reached out to me and said, hey, send us some work. Michael seems to think you've got some stuff. And so I just sent them images, and they picked that one. And their question was, do you still have it? Because we want to photograph it with you in person. And I happen to have it. It hadn't been sold. And I was always wondering, how come this piece hadn't sold? Well,
it was for that purpose.
It was for that purpose. Definitely.
Wow.
One of my favorite pieces.
You know, that's way
cool. This is called Old Time Religion.
Yep.
This is Jazz Motif. And this is a relative of mine in my family, John Handy, saxophone player. Teacher also at San Francisco State College. Not anymore. He travels, though. But John Handy. Yeah.
Wow.
I did that for his 80th birthday party. The original one was all wrapped. I took it to him, and I was so nervous because I knew I didn't spend a whole lot of time with the details on the saxophone. I was a little nervous showing it to him. And he opened it up, and he said, hey, Emily, how you doing, girl?
Hi.
Good.
Good to see you.
Good to see you. Yeah, good to see you. All right, yeah.
I was just lurking your Instagram.
okay. This is Will, this is Emily, so if you ever come back.
Hi, guys.
This is Troy.
Nice to meet
you. This is Emily.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, welcome.
Thanks. Jewelry designer.
Yeah.
Oh, really cool.
Awesome.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, the card
we love
you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Are you designers too?
Not designers.
Let's go back to the story. I want you to listen to the following clip. Listen closely.
Not me. Then me. But for this, he opened it up, and I was really nervous. He says, you got my hands. I was like, whoo.
If you weren't following the story so far, Ronell paints John Handy, a member of his family. After completing it, he takes the painting and hands it to the saxophone player. There's a tense moment of not knowing how he would feel about it. Then all of a sudden, he says, you got my hands. That's beautiful because in that moment, it captures two of the most fundamental cores of making, of creating, which is sharing joy and vulnerability. Sharing the joy with John Handy. Through the medium of paint and color, he shares joy, at least attempts to share his joy with his family member, John Handy. Yet, even in this confidence, there is nervousness. Even with decades of experience, there's this meekness, this timidness as to how the other person is going to react. The best word to define that is vulnerability. Where joy and vulnerability intersect is where art is born.
And people who have made stuff, not just necessarily made it, but make things. I want to kind of go through the process of your creative process. How do you make this piece? I mean, you're so proud of it. What about it stuck out to you? Why is it so important to you? Not just in the end composition, the way it all flows together, but usually in things that we value the most, there's a story behind it. Is there a story behind this piece?
It's a slice of my life. It's a slice of my life, and when I said it reminded me of my 13th birthday party, there was a very, it represents a very uncalculated freedom, vulnerability, innocence at 13 years old, dancing in the garage with my friends for my birthday party. A very celebratory kind of experience in my life where nothing really mattered except for my birthday and having fun. I mean, that was really it. It just points to a time in my life where things were less complicated. I didn't have a career to try to, I didn't have a wife with children to raise. I didn't. When I did it, I was hearkening back to that.
Okay.
And I'm playing, you know, the music of Hugh Masekela. I'm playing that in my studio as I'm painting, as I'm doing the underpainting for his face and his body. And then I'm taking my, you know, I'm taking my palette knife and I'm scooping up paint. If you go around there and look at that, yeah. this took a while to dry, which is not always the reason why I like using oils, because they take longer to dry. Yeah. The outside of it could be dry, but underneath it could still be moist.
Yeah.
And so it takes a long time to dry. I'm a quick guy. I like to paint like that.
Yeah.
Acrylic, very fast.
Yeah.
It made me kind of slow down, but this really harkened back to an experience, a time in my life, and I wanted to portray that musician, and I even toyed with the issue of not painting him a black man.
Interesting.
This, I think, was like a coming out thing for me in 05 to say, it's okay to put color in the face, and it's okay. It's okay. People still get it. Stop trying to edit what people are going to see right now. Go ahead and just release yourself to put color in the face and everywhere, because even when you step into color around you, if you stepped into a red room, if yeah. Troy stepped into a red room, he wouldn't be his skin color. The colors reflect off of him by what he's around.
That's powerful. But it wasn't enough. I had to dig deeper. Because there are many painters, yet every painter has a subject matter or a particular painting he or she goes back to. So for Rennell, I just had to know, why jazz?
Love and passion for the jazz musician. Because they just wanted to do their work here in our country and be recognized for the wonderful work that they do.
Yeah.
They wanted the world to hear them, and they really were more celebrated outside of the United States than in the United States. So they could, you know, Duke Ellington could be celebrated with his band, and Hampton, and Dizzy Gillespie in Paris, in Germany. They loved them, and they recognized them for the gift they had. But when they came back to the United States, they couldn't even go through the front door of the hotel that they were playing at. And so there's this thing that when I paint the musician, and I paint a lot of them, I'm celebrating who they wanted to be. And they wanted to be men who were respected for what they did and what they brought. Unfortunately, a lot of times they got involved in drugs and things just by the pressure of what they were dealing with, living in our country and not being recognized and celebrated for who they were. Until years later after they died. Then they go, oh, that guy was brilliant. But while he lived, he couldn't come in the front door of the hotel.
Yeah.
He had to come in the colored section. He had to live in inadequate ways of and means. So part of that is in every single jazz artist that I paint, there is that equilibrium of celebration, but yet tragedy in there. It's in there. And so you make a good point. You make a good point. Because I think all of us want to be able to... God gives each one of us a gift. And when we find it, when we own it, it's the platform by which we exist, that we speak from. It's the place of our confidence. It's the place of our being and our purposefulness. We can get up every day. We get up every day and we go, I know who I am. I know what I'm here for. Therefore, anybody else who tries to distract all of that, they can't take that away from me. This is one thing I know I'm pretty good at, and people are responding to. And so that's what these jazz artists had. You know, Monk, you know, Oscar Peterson, you know, Wes Montgomery, you know, Ella Fitzgerald, Lady Day, Nina Simone.
Get on back to them drums. I'll start this. Lady J.
Wes Montgomery, you know, Ella Fitzgerald, Lady Day, Nina Simone.
If you're like me, you're probably wondering, how does this man do it? How does he make the time to paint so much?
Now when it comes down to the nitty-gritty, let's say, I find it interesting, remember how we were talking outside, and you kind of playing both worlds, playing the tech world and also
You gotta eat, right? Working at Apple, I gotta do it.
I
told you, you can hit your head on the wall, right?
Yeah. Where do you make the time? How do you actually sit down and say, well, it's time to paint? Because honestly, in anyone's life, everyone has this representation of a blank canvas. How do you reach across and look at that blank canvas and say, it's time? I must do it. How long does this take you? How much time do you set aside per day to actually do this? Where do you
begin? You ready to have a glass of wine? That's a great question. So I'm not a TV watcher. So I don't like to have my ideas robbed from me when they're fresh in my mind.
What do you mean?
I mean, like right now, I have an image. I went to see the movie Moonlight. There's an image in my mind right now that I want to do today. And I'm gonna do it. And I have some time. And I like to take advantage of those pockets of time. Don't come into my room in Hayes Valley because I got papers and stuff everywhere of things that I'm working through and that I'm going to finish. But I find that when things are fresh on my mind, I wanna get it out. I wanna get that idea out, that invention out, that thing out of my psyche and onto the paper. And so I will. Hey, what's up, man? How you doing? I'm good, baby. Good to see you.
Just another time you're reminded that you're in his element, that these are his stomping grounds.
Yeah, this is Troy.
Hey, Quan.
This is Will.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, he works here in this place. Keeps his joint going.
Yeah. And I enjoy the art. So
good. Awesome.
Thank you so much. Thank you. So yeah, it's taking advantage of those pockets of time. Because people ask me that all the time. You're not the only one. I just had a show recently at 456 Montgomery. We'll be closing out that show on the 24th of this month. But the people who came there, who saw all the work, that was their question I kept getting asked. When do you find the time to do this? And it's, I compartmentalize. Even if I work maybe from a 7 a.m. shift to 4 p.m., I'll come home, I'll eat, I'll lay down, I'll set my alarm to wake me up like at 6:30. I want to get up and I want to get this thing out of me. So I take advantages of those pockets of time, and I work fast too. And this is at home. And when I go to my art studio, that's different. My pace is a little slower. I can throw paint around and work on something and have the whole day to work on it, or several hours within the day. And I'm talking about my off day. So there isn't a real rhyme or reason where I go, every Tuesday, every day. It doesn't work like that for me. I'm like moving around. What's up? I'm like moving around passion. I'm like moving around and taking advantage of those pockets of time. I'm filling them up with my preference to do this. And I also have in the back of my mind, Will, that I have this movement going on. There's already people who have already been looking at my work, and I'm building this whole group, this whole kaleidoscope, this whole movement of work, that every piece that's added to it adds on, and it grows and grows and grows. And so I'm happy, I'm very, very happy that I have some images that are already out there that people go, oh, you run, I saw that, you know? And people who don't, that's cool. But I continue to feel like that my purpose for being here on Earth as an artist is to share the view and color that God gave me to celebrate with in my work. And so I just keep throwing, whenever I get, it could be a small painting, a big painting, whatever. It could be a poster for Hake Street, a poster for like Mission Bay, whatever. I'm gonna continue with it. I'm gonna use those pockets of time that I have available to me. Sometimes I might go, I just wanna sleep. I don't feel like doing nothing right now. And that happens.
That's only fun.
My day at Apple can be crazy, you know? You know, but most of the time, I wanna own this. I wanna own this, and I wanna celebrate the God's love and the use of the color in my work. Yeah, that's a good question.
Every great creator, every great inventor, they have, it's not all chaos. There's some methods in that, no matter how mad it may appear. Yeah. And I think for me, what I'm taking from this is that he has two different methods to which he kind of creates. One is when he goes back home, rests for a little bit, wakes up at 6 p.m., and then he says something that's very cool. I just, and right. He says I act very differently than my art studio. It's
right.
More like methodical, there's a lot more method in
methodical.
Methodical, uh-huh. Right?
Yes.
There's a lot more method in how he actually approaches it.
It's true.
But more specifically, there's two ways in which he creates. One, this rapid fire way,
yes.
To create, to execute, to fail,
right.
To succeed,
right.
To find out what works, and then he takes all the learnings from those mini experiments into the studio, and that's where he actually sits and creates.
Can I record that? Because, yeah.
It's one thing I've come to learn. Making is a habit. We are propelled towards actions that are unconscious, yet within them exists a pattern. I took a glance at my watch, and hours had gone by, and it only fitting that it end like this.
All right, man. Thanks for the interview, baby. I hope it's all good.
It's all good. It's all good. It's all
good. Thank you so much, man. Yeah, I'll be hollering at you.
Then. Yeah, most definitely.
Thanks to Rondell, and thanks to you for listening to another episode of The Makers Make. For more on Rondell, you can go to The Makers page on www.themakersmake.com/makers. Or you can simply go to his website at www.ronellroberts.com. That's RONELROBERTS.com. And if you're a maker with a story to be told, you can reach out at interview@themakersmake.com. That's interview@themakersmake.com.
It's a Hugh Masekela from South Africa.